The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 18. Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 18.
This was a great idea, Wally. I can't remember the last time we've had a chance to catch up.
Mostly my fault. I've been pretty busy in Central City.
I want to hear all about it. I saw some of it on the news, but it's not the same.
I'm sorry. I thought we were having dinner tonight.
Is it Tuesday? Silly me. Making dinner plans with two beautiful women on the same night.
Uh-huh.
We can do this another time.
Don't be ridiculous. We can all have a meal together. It's a chance for us to get reacquainted, patch things up.
Assuming we want to.
Now there's an example of exactly the kind of thing we're not gonna do anymore, right? I'm telling you. Once we clear the air, everybody's gonna be pals again. I always thought the reason you two don't get along is that you're so much alike.
Like her?
You weren't gonna eat that, were you? You guys aren't even trying. You can at least talk to each other.
First up, we have the episode called The Balance. In her workshop, Tala is attempting to magically remove the Annihilator's weaknesses. To wit, its tendency to shut down in the absence of aggression. Her mentor, Felix Faust,
Christ.
Now existing only as a disembodied spirit trapped in a mirror since she rescued him from Tartarus, is looking over her shoulder. When her latest attempt fails, he says he knows the answer and tricks her into casting a spell that frees Faust and traps her in his steed. His spirit takes control of the Annihilator and goes stomping out of Cadmus. Aboard the Watchtower, Flash is trying to mend fences between Wonder Woman and Shayera, but failing miserably. That's kind of an understatement. Diana passes the infirmary. She's surprised to see Etrigan, Dr. Fate, and Zatanna all writhing under some invisible torture. Wonder Woman returns to her quarters and finds Hermes, messenger of the gods, with a message that she is to return to Themyscira. Faust has walked straight to the gates of Tartarus and usurped Hades' throne in revenge for his betrayal. As a result, the balance between Olympus and Tartarus has been upset, hence the turmoil felt by the League's magic users. By order of Zeus, Diana must restore it. That's kind of a nice one, do it or die.
Well, she's basically...
she doesn't have much of a choice in the matter.
I'm just going to bring up one of my four notes for this episode right now because the whole Hermes-Diana exchange is like, oh, you know, he gives her a scroll for some goddess hooker or something or other. I don't remember what it was. And then he reads her the Zeus proclamation and she goes, so he's telling me to go to...
Yeah.
I love that. That was awesome.
I'll go into that with my notes. But anyway, back to the recap. After examination of her own weapons, Diana concludes that she needs Shire's nth metal mace, which disrupts magic. She sneaks into Shire's quarters to steal it, but Shire catches her. Swallowing her pride, Diana asks to borrow it, but Shire insists on coming with her. Together they reach Themyscira, where Hippolyta objects to Diana breaking her exile. Diana says that she must enter the gates. Before she goes, Hippolyta touches Diana's tiara, unlocking her armor's full power. Wow, guys, a gay guy that can't say tiara. Blech.
It's like she hit you in the head with the tiara.
Pretty much. She's Sailor Moon? What? Inside, they face many demons, but they are repelled when they see Shire believing her to be an angel. She only remarks, if we're lucky, they'll all be that dumb. Inside Tartarus, the two women capture a demon, Abnegezer, who leads them, under the influence of Diana's golden lasso, to Hades' library, and he advises them that you really, really shouldn't go in there, where Faust is happily immersed in tomes of ancient forbidden knowledge. When they confront him, he sends them plummeting down a hole in the floor with a casual spell. In a snowy region of Tartarus, they find Hades chained to a rock and being tormented by vultures. They free him, and the three of them return to the library to attack. In the ensuing battle, the library is largely destroyed, but Shire's mace proves to be capable of hurting the Annihilator. Faust seizes Shire and begins crushing her to death, but Diana takes up the mace and strikes a devastating blow. The armor is destroyed, and a tiny portion of Faust's soul is left drifting. Hades picks it up and announces his plans to make it his hobby. He bids the ladies farewell, calling Diana my child. When she objects, Hades claims that he and Hippolyta worked together in sculpting her from clay. Shire assures Diana that Hades is lying, and she can use her lasso on him. Diana says she doesn't need to. She already knows who her real family is. Returning to Themyscira, they are welcomed by a cheering crowd. Despite the law of the gods, Hippolyta rescinds Diana's exile at last, stating that she will face the gods when it comes to it. As they are welcomed to a farewell banquet, Diana and Shire make peace. They may not be friends, but they are both content with being teammates. Okay, sir, so let's hear your other three notes.
Oh, shit, not Faust again.
You really don't like him.
No. And you know what the sad thing is? You know what the sad thing is? Freddy Krueger plays one of the worst characters in the DCAU. He voiced Felix Faust. Robert Englund voiced Felix Faust.
Him? I thought that was him.
Yep. Yep. And my last one was, it came up earlier, you had mentioned Flash. Why is it that I'm thinking that Flash is Holden?
It was horrible. It was painful to watch.
I know, but it's like, the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw that scene was Chasing Amy, and I love that movie. So I don't know why it popped into my head with that scene.
That's
but...
right. I had lunch with two ladies. Woo!
At the same time. Oh, God. Flash is awesome, but jeez. What do you got?
Okay. So Flash being Mr. Smooth, we've already covered that. The comment between Diana and Shire when they're having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Shire says the pasta's really good, and Diana's like, well, it's the sauce. There's no sauce on that pasta.
I know.
There's peas and shells. That's it. We see Etrigan again, but sadly, he's not a baby.
No, actually, I think it's good that he's not a baby, because if they showed baby Etrigan being tortured by this whole magic disruption thing, that would be kind of...
They could have him, like, going crazy and, like, flying around in circles or something.
Well, yeah, but they were all strapped down, though. That's the problem.
He would have been in a giant magical baby crate. Yeah.
You're reaching there, dude.
Okay, there was a scene where Diana grabbed her, pressed her earring, mm-hmm. And the only thing that jumped in my head was shows over synergy from Jen.
Yeah, that's true.
The gods are decreeing stuff all the time around here, ma'am. Okay, so something that did rub me the wrong way is the whole, oh, look, I'm an angel. You're kind of mixing your theological mythos there a bit.
Well, true, but, I mean, to pull one over on the demons, it was kind of cool. I actually liked it.
The demon, though, that we did get a name for, I thought, like, Smeagol? Is that you? the comment of Magic Lasso. Who knew? Okay, fine. Don't tell me. We had some really asymmetrical hair look going on from... It was either Diana or Shayera, and it looked really good in comparison to what we had before. I think it was Shayera.
Yeah, probably.
I cried when I saw that library get trashed. Like, seriously, I was like, no! I could be so happy there.
You'd be happy surrounded by skull and bones in a library? Ew.
Oh, come on, dude. I'm a Halloween freak.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the teleport that... the teleportation that Hades had made me think of the Dead Scream attack from Sailor Moon that Sailor Pluto does. Very epic, very wind, very quiet. So Hippolyta standing up for the gods. I'm pretty sure, like... oh, forgive me. Hera would forgive her for just, you know, the whole bringing daughter back. I will say, however, though... Hermes was spot on. Like, I love that. We've had, like, really crappy Hades and Ares. No, we've got Hermes that's, like, the sly, witty, like, getting it on with every girl that he can think of. And, you know, that fit. Mr. Messenger of the Gods, that is Hermes to a T. So,
yeah.
My hat and my pagan heart goes out to these guys for actually pulling something good for once.
This is the last time that we really see a lot of
the gods.
Diana's, well, the gods and Themyscira and Hippolyta. The only other real mythological type of stories that they do is when we get to Hawkman and Hawkgirl over in season 5.
So there is one other thing that I need to bring up.
Yes.
How is Tala going to explain this? I mean, you can just tell when she's in the mirror. She's just like, ah, shit.
Yeah. I don't know how she's going to explain it.
Oh, and who does she have to explain it to? Come on. It's not good.
Amanda Waller, yep.
And she'd be the type just to shatter the glass, too.
Well, of course, you know, Tala isn't just a throwaway character because she comes up a lot later. Because... you know, she had a crush on Grodd, now she has a crush on Lex, but that'll come up way later, though.
Well, we'll see. Are we ready to go to the next episode?
Yes, I think we are, so we will do that.
Do you have any idea what you've done?
Yes, I hunted a murderer. A murderer the League's protecting.
We don't have time for this. We've got to ask the question what he just picked up and put in his pocket.
Me?
Don't make me ask again.
Oh. You mean this?
It's a storage key for a place down by the train station.
All right, you two stay here. Don't make me sick Black Canary on you. You've only seen her nice side so far. What was that for?
All that crazy mystery man mojo and you couldn't even pick up a clue without being seen?
The key wasn't the clue. The key was mine. Now, this list of container ship arrivals I palmed while they were yelling at you, that's the clue.
I don't get it. Why aren't we on our way to the train station?
Because I know when I'm being conned.
You're cute when you're an insufferable smarty pants.
We You're even smarter than they say.
Smart enough to realize you don't know jack about Cadmus.
I needed your help.
Talk to me about Mandragora. What did he do to you?
You wouldn't understand.
Wouldn't understand what? That he worked for your father, Franco Bertinelli? Or that your father was himself a powerful crime boss? You were just a child. You certainly didn't understand what your father did for a living. You just knew that when he talked, people listened. That he always had his guys around him to do whatever he said. And that the most frightening one was Mandragora. Looking into his eyes was like looking into an empty pit. One terrible night, Mandragora decided he no longer wished to take orders.
Get behind me, Helena. It'll be all right.
Your father hoped to protect you by hiding you in a closet.
He's coming!
But you saw it all, Helena. Stephen Mandragora killed your parents while you watched, helplessly. Isn't that what happened?
If you knew all that, then you probably know what I'm going to do to Mandragora when I catch him. So why help me?
That is the question. Somebody's following us.
Lose them.
Like airline luggage.
You're not supposed to drive when you're angry.
They're heading towards the waterfront. Hang on.
It's so funny you think you have to tell me that.
Stop the car, Question. Pull over.
Stop following us, Canary.
Is that her? Give me that.
Hey!
You want a piece of me, Blondie? Bring it.
This is so unnecessary. Are we dead yet?
No.
Are we dead yet?
Look, if we die, I promise I'll let you know.
Train.
I see it.
Train!
I see it.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry I saved our lives.
Up next is Double Date. Huntress infiltrates Stephen Mandragora's high security mansion, sneaks into his bedroom, and empties her crossbow into the bed. But she is shocked to peel back the sheets and see a pile of artfully arranged pillows. Before she can do more, she is teleported up to the watchtower, where she is confronted by a very angry John Jones. He says she was ordered to stay away from Mandragora. While she is appalled to realize that the League is actually protecting him, Jean dismisses her from the League and orders her to clean out her quarters. Returning to her cabin, I can't believe they call them cabins in the middle of a giant fucking space station, she happens across a muttering Question engaged in his obsessive search for a link between Lex Luthor and Project Cadmus. Using all the feminine wiles she can command, she offers Question a deal. He helps her find Mandragora, and she'll share what she knows about Cadmus, which in reality is absolutely fucking nothing. And he accepts. Mandragora, it turns out, is being kept in a safe house by federal agents before his trial, as they expect him to testify on his criminal associates in exchange for leniency. The League has assigned Green Arrow, woohoo, and Black Canary to assist the agents. The task proves onerous as Mandragora goes out of his way to be offensive. Before long, Green Arrow has to be restrained. though it is Black Canary who throws a punch that gets both of them expelled from the house. Taking watch from a treehouse, they see Huntress and Question pull up outside. Forewarned by Jean, they bar the way and the two couples clash. At the same time, two of Mandragora's thugs arrive at the front door dressed as policemen, causing a diversion that allows Mandragora to overpower his captors and escape. As Canary argues with Huntress and Question over the ruins of the safe house, Arrow notices the Question pick up something from the floor, a key to a locker at the train station. Arrow and Canary leave to pursue Mandragora, while Question reveals that the key wasn't the clue. The clue he picked up was the schedule of freighter arrivals at the local docks. However, Arrow was suspicious, and he and Canary wait to see Huntress and Question leave. En route to the docks, Question reveals that he knows full well that Huntress knows nothing about Cadmus, and knows why she is so bent on revenge. Her father, Franco Bertinelli, was powerful mob boss when Huntress was only a child. Mandragora, Franco's chief enforcer, took over the gang, killing Huntress's parents while she watched from a hiding place. Blinking back tears, Huntress asks Question why he is helping her perform what he knows will be revenge. A revenge killing. He doesn't answer, but instead notices that Canary and Arrow are following them on her motorcycle. Question manages to lose them in a railway tunnel, but the two couples still reach the docks at the same time. Arrow and Canary try to overpower Mandragora, but he is too strong for them. Huntress aims her crossbow at him, and he surrenders. He is expecting to be returned to custody, but Huntress says that that's not what she has planned. She is about to execute him when a small boy runs to Mandragora from an arriving ship, shouting, "Papa! Papa!" Oh, God. Mandragora hugs his son, explaining that the boy was kidnapped by a rival gang, and he has only now managed to rescue him. He never intended to cooperate with the federal agents, but instead was stalling until the boy was rescued. Then they would both disappear and take on new identities. Question leaves the choice to Huntress, and she makes the right one. She turns her crossbow up and drops a heavy crane load onto Mandragora.
I'm not going to shoot him. I'm just going to crush him to death.
That's about the speed of it. Knocking him unconscious, he is returned to federal custody, now left with no choice but to cooperate while his son is likewise taken into protective custody. Huntress realizes that Question knew all along that Mandragora's plan was, and that his son would be arriving. She asks why, then, would he go to such trouble to help her find him, including risking his own life. Sheepishly, Question admits that it was because he, quote-unquote, likes her. Swept away. What?
The way you said that. He likes her.
Yeah. Swept away, Huntress plants a big kiss on his face, mask and all, and drags him away to someplace more private, while Black Canary remarks, "I'm sorry, but ew." I don't know what it is about, like, these first three episodes, even though I love Double Date. I only have five notes, actually, which one of them doesn't really count since it's just a superpower. But you know who Huntress is voiced by?
Oh, who?
You know, Amy Acker.
You know I'm bad with names.
Amy Acker. She was another Buffyverse person. She was Fred in Angel.
That was Fred?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And of course, yay, GABC relationship episode. Woohoo! I just love the part on the train tracks. It's nice that you think you have to tell me to hold on.
they're awesome.
Yeah, they are. When the two couples are fighting each other, Huntress does an upside down spinning kick. Wow, that was sexy and lethal all at the same time.
Now, that was a spinning bird kick from like Street Fighter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a Chun-Li move.
Oh.
Yeah. Is it just me or I don't know. Have you ever seen Mask of the Phantasm?
A long time ago. I did see it when it came out.
Is it just me, or has the Huntress backstory been told before? Can you say hello, Andrea Beaumont? from Mask of the Phantasm. This is the exact... The only thing that didn't happen was Huntress changed her identity to a phantasm or something. This is the exact same backstory of Andrea Beaumont from Mask of the Phantasm.
Yep.
Where in Mask of the Phantasm, Beaumont's father was linked to the mob, and Joker was around then, or the person that would have become the Joker was around then, and the mob killed her father, and her mother had already passed away, but it's still the same type of story. And then my final little note is this is the first time we hear the canary cry.
No, it's not.
It's not, but it just...
No, because
I know why I did it. Yeah, no, I know why I said it like I did, because I put canary cry with like 6 exclamation points behind it, was because... she basically failed in using it because Mandragora just fought it off. I mean, it was almost like Wonder Woman with Vox Boy when she had the diamonds in her ears.
Yeah, it was. It was interesting considering we saw before the whole. I don't want to use it too close because it'll kill them. Apparently not.
Yeah. Apparently. Well, but then again, I mean, Mandragora. He looks like he's a fat slob. But like Black Canary said, he's nothing but muscle. Yeah, I mean it's a complete illusion on his part. So, what did you have for this one?
Okay, to continue on with what you were just saying.
Yes,
it's exactly like Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin.
Yeah,
there's no fat on that guy. It's all muscle, folks. What else? So, as usual, I've got a whole bunch of notes. So, double date. The mobsters laughing about the recipes in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how many times I got to tell you, if you do it that way, you're going to burn it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what? Hello? Oh. Okay.
Now, I honestly tried. I tried looking up who those guys were in reference to. Because I swear that they were a reference to something. Some comedy team that had a back and forth like that.
I honestly don't know.
I don't think it was Abbott and Costello. Because I don't think they ever had a routine like that. If anybody knows, anybody that actually listens to this podcast, if anybody knows, what I'm talking about is the beginning scene of Double Date. The two mobsters. What the hell are the damn names? Anyway, they're the two mobsters that are outside Mandragora's house that they have this back and forth about, what is it? Not cannolis. What was it, dude?
Oh, I wish I could remember.
You can't even remember. Yeah. Great.
Was it cannolis?
No, it wasn't cannolis. It was something else. I don't know. But... It seems like I've seen that comedy bit before. I'm not sure. So if anybody knows, you can email me, tfgonmike@gmail.com. What else you got?
Okay. The Huntress, we get to see... with the Huntress and Black Canary, we get to see two of the Birds of Prey fighting each other.
Yep.
Okay, so we have Jean totally pissed, but he's making sure that none of the heroes cross the line that would spark this whole superhuman arms race.
True.
The question, the connection of the Girl Scouts in crop circles. Damn those cookies.
Actually, yeah. More of Question's, not really crackpot ideas, but more of his...
conspiracy theories?
Conspiracy theories will come up a little bit later.
You've got something special for that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Agent Faraday.
Yeah.
That sounded really familiar and excellent voice. I have, for some reason, the voice of Mandragora.
Mm-hmm.
Who were these people? Because they sounded... Agent Faraday, like the name, sounded really, really familiar. Like, is this a character we've seen before? Or is this something from, like, a name drop that might have come up from New Frontier?
No. Okay. Well, New Frontier was after this, so that's probably where they got it from. But I think Faraday is part of DC Comics lore. Why don't you go through some of your other notes, and I will look it up really quick.
Okay. The whole comment of, you're the one that punched him. And then the whole the classic line of Green Arrow to Black Canary calling her Pretty Bird, which is his pet name for her, and it comes up often in comics. It's nice to know that they actually pulled something from comics and made that staple to really cement it for people like me. Let's see. What did the question just put in his pocket? Oh, who? Me? The whole innocent act that he did. That was awesome. The Huntress's father is apparently Scarface, if you look at the animation model. That really was like, what? Really?
Tony and Cecil were the two goons at the beginning.
Okay.
Tony was voiced by Joe Nipote, and Cecil was voiced by Steve Sharippa, who I think Steve Sharippa was one of the guys from The Sopranos.
Okay. Maybe it was in the episode of Sopranos. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Stephen Mandragora was voiced by Glenn Shaddix. And who is the other one you wanted to know about?
Oh, no, it was just a question about Faraday and his abilities.
Oh, he was voiced by Scott Patterson. King Faraday, let's see, continuity, background, trivia. This episode marks the first appearance of Special Agent King Faraday and the first speaking appearance of Huntress. Let me see. Opening new tab. Faraday was once assigned to protect and extract information from Stephen Mandragora. When Lex Luthor escaped prison, he became the liaison between U.S. government and Justice League. Appearances and references. He's in Doubledate, I Am Legion, To Another Shore, and Dead Reckoning. He's only mentioned in Dead Reckoning. It's only giving me like JLU references. It's not Agent of Undisclosed Branch of the United States. It's not giving me like if he's a comic
Okay.
reference. Yeah, it's just giving his what his DCAU stuff is. So I can look him up another way really quick. What else you got?
What else do I got? So the que okay, the whole interaction of the motorcycle slamming into the train
Oh,
and
yeah.
then teleporting out, and BC is totally ripped. It took me so long to rebuild that from scratch. And
Yep.
it's like, oh, really? No, thanks for getting us out alive. Thanks, dear. No, they're not in a relationship at all. So the big question after this whole episode is, where exactly is she kissing? The question, because there's no mouth on that mask. It's
Well,
a mask that completely seals off his mouth, his face.
yeah,
Where
and
exactly?
and of course, later on, down the line in this episode, we'll get to more Huntress question stuff. As far as Faraday himself, he was named King by his father as a joke play on the phrase "King for a day." An ex-soldier, he took position as a counter-espionage agent for the U.S. government and engaged in a variety of standard spy-type capers. Some of his danger trial adventures were reprinted in Showcase number 50, May to June 1964, under the title I Spy. Faraday has since been incorporated full bore into the DC Universe as a member of the Central Bureau of Intelligence. At one point, he was Nightshade's mentor. In fact, he had a hand in both her and Bronze Tiger being recruited into Task Force X. He has also teamed up with Batman a few times. On two of the occasions, he was helped Batman in the capture of Two-Face. Let's see, 1 year later, he is a member of Checkmate, serving as bishop for a White Queen, Amanda Waller. He was in New Frontier. Faraday plays a prominent role in the alternate universe series DC The New Frontier. He leads an effort to containing Corral, the large amount of superpowered entities appearing. So yeah, he's been in comics for number of at least since 1964, so it's not just a character that they made up in Justice League.
Okay.
I don't know. I think Double Date's a really fun episode.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, It's very, very fun. And there really isn't like too many things that you can really discount about it. I mean, yeah, you can say the fighting between the two couples is kind of catty, and I mean, well, at least with the females anyway.
Oh, I see what you did.
What? Wasn't really. Oh yeah, no, I wasn't really going there, but yeah, I see what I did there now too. for Selena Kyle when you really need her.
Oh God. Okay, so that totally brings up a recent episode of Brave and the Bold where it is the Birds of Prey and Catwoman is in there doing a song with Huntress and Black Canary.
Wow.
Yep.
That's cool. Yeah, I just think this is a really fun episode. It gives us some light into the GABC relationship. And I really like that, you know, I like, you know, Ken Shriner, who voiced Arrow, and the chick that voices Canary. And I wish that they would have done more with them, but I know that at this point they weren't sure if they were getting another season or two seasons or whatever. So I don't know. I just wish there was more of them. Or, you know, we could just have like a Unhoneymooners cartoon series with Black Canary and Arrow with Huntress in Question. That would have been awesome.
Maybe we can check the comics and see if there's anything in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we're going to move on.
Understand.
Out of my way, Lex. I don't know what's down there, but...
Hey, guys, let's take it easy, okay?
Captain Marvel, thank heaven you're here. He just won't listen.
You don't have X-ray vision. I do. There's some sort of device buried beneath us, and I'm shutting it down.
No! If you touch it, it could go off.
Go off?
So you admit you put a bomb under this city?
Not a bomb. An experimental fusion engine. It'll supply nearly free energy to everyone who lives here.
See?
Then why the lead shielding?
It's for your protection. The engine creates energy through controlled fusion of kryptonite molecules.
See?
And why didn't you tell me this?
Maybe I was afraid you wouldn't believe me.
Let's call the Atom or Steel to check the device over. See if what Luthor says is true.
At least someone around here is keeping a cool.
Let me swallow. That didn't sound right.
Oh, man. Robin spits, formerly swallows. Well, which is it, baby? Spits or swallows? Oh, Austin Powers references.
I'm trying not to choke on this pork.
Yeah,
I know.
That must have been one hell of a chop.
Judo chop!
Yeah.
Okay, ready.
Go anytime.
God, you're going to keep this in, aren't you?
No, hell no. I'm going to cut this out.
Special bonus feature, folks. Next, we have The Clash. When Superman is occupied by a plummeting airliner, the Justice League's newest recruit answers Batman's call for backup. After quickly halting the parasite's rampage through Metropolis, Captain Marvel is introduced to his idol Superman, though the Man of Steel isn't quite sure what to make of him. Circled by a swarm of reporters, including Lois Lane, Marvel makes an offhanded comment about Lex Luthor's rumored presidential bid. The new Justice Leaguer flies away to his hometown of Fawcett City, and speaks his magical word, Shazam, which transforms him into his true self, a normal 10-year-old boy named Billy Batson. The next day, aboard the Watchtower, Captain Marvel is awed by the collection of heroes who see him as one of the guys. But Superman angrily brings Marvel before the League Council, the 7 original members, and tears into him. Marvel's remark about Lex Luthor has been inflated by the media into a full-fledged political endorsement by a major superhero.
Oh, boy.
Superman lectures a young hero about how complicated the world is, and someone like Lex Luthor shouldn't be taken at face value. Marvel argues his belief that people like Luthor can indeed change for the better. A little later, Batman and Superman debate the pros and cons of Captain Marvel while casually mopping the floor with a group of supervillains. They just talk shop, you know.
I know, it's so awesome. Wait, wasn't that a hologram?
I didn't think so. I don't remember. I was taking notes at the time. Meanwhile, Lex Luthor himself has invited Superman to participate in the celebration of Lexor City. Oh, hubris. Luthor's newest legitimate project, which promises modern housing for low-income families in a safe and friendly community. Though distrustful of Luthor's motives and still irritated by his encounter with Marvel, Superman grudgingly agrees to make an appearance. At the ceremony, a suspicious Superman scans underneath Lexor City, and his X-ray vision finds what he believes to be a potentially dangerous device. Luthor claims innocence and explains that the device in question is simply a new power generator for the complex, with kryptonite as its cheap energy source. Billy Batson is also present, and he becomes Captain Marvel in a noble attempt to calm Superman, who is now openly accusing Lex of planning a criminal act. In a rare public display of anger, Superman lashes out at Marvel and begins to tunnel his way towards Luthor's machine. Marvel answers Superman's challenge, and a tremendous battle takes place between the two most powerful beings on Earth. Much of Lexor City is damaged or destroyed, as Superman and Captain Marvel trade thunderous, earth-shattering punches. Superman seems to have a slight advantage, perhaps due to his experience in anger, while Marvel grabs him in a bear hug and calls down a lightning bolt with his magic word. After two painful strikes, Superman dodges a third, and Marvel is replaced by the harmless Billy Batson. But the Atom later confirms Luthor's innocence. The machine was no more than a power generator. Superman is publicly humiliated and offers a quick apology to Luthor. Lex not only accepts Superman's apology, but the reformed villain vows to completely rebuild Lexor City with his own money. Marvel is disgusted by Superman's actions and calls a meeting with the League Council to announce his resignation. The young hero claims that the League no longer acts like true heroes. As Marvel leaves, Superman expresses a regret to his teammates and agrees with Marvel, fearing that the Justice League has lost its way. Batman, however, is not fooled. The whole event was a setup by them. Dun, dun, dun. Now who's sounding like the question? Back in Metropolis, Lex Luthor explains to an unknown companion that the plan went better than expected. The entire purpose of the kryptonite power source was to arouse Superman's suspicion and cause the incident that would tarnish the League's reputation. The destruction of Lexor City not only embarrassed Superman and the League, but it boosted Lex's public image as well. Lex pops open a bottle of wine and shares a drink with his mystery collaborator, Amanda Waller.
Well, at least he didn't kiss her, thank God.
That's for the straight for DVD.
Oh, poor elongated man.
Dude, it's the Piz.
I know, but he got flattened.
I know. Oh, poor Piv. Poor Mr. Digby.
Yeah. John, we need backup down here. Are you asking for help? Yes, but you never asked for help. Just get us some reinforcements.
That was awesome.
You're my biggest fan. Excuse me? I mean, I'm your biggest fan. I wonder if anybody who has ever gone to conventions, whether it be Transformers or anything else like that, has ever said that to somebody.
Oh, God, yeah.
What, that you're my biggest fan? And then, oh, excuse me, I mean, I'm your biggest fan.
If you're See?
See, you can't even talk. What the hell?
Oh, goddamn English. If you're starstruck, you say a lot of really stupid stuff.
Yep.
Not that I would know from personal experience.
Liar. I know Batson is a kid in an adult body, but geez, high-fiving everyone, give me a break.
Again, 10-year-old.
I know. You just don't go blabbing to the press.
Again, 10-year-old.
I know, that's going to be your excuse for everything I come up with Billy Batson. Since when do you start jumping to conclusions?
That's a good point.
Well, that was Batman to Superman there. Hero fight. I like how the... Oh, yeah. at the beginning of the episode, I like how the Watchtower gets a gleaming sunshot, and then at the end, it gets like a fading sunshot, like it's closing a chapter, like closing a like all these events. Well, they did happen in one day, but it's like sun up and sun down. That was really cool.
It's also a great sign for end of the Golden Age too.
End of the Golden Age.
Yeah, people don't trust them quite nearly as much.
Oh, yeah.
See that they're going into the dark times.
Right. Yeah. Very, very true. I didn't think of that. That's true. Yes. So what do you got for Clash?
Okay. Mind you, it's not nearly as much as the other ones, but so we covered the whole never ask for help. The scene where Superman gets his cape in his face. And it just made me think of The Incredibles and their designer going, "No capes! No capes!"
Yeah.
So poor Billy Batson, you know, he's off saving the world. He's got to go back and get, like, yelled at by his teachers. Really? Oh, poor kid. And speaking of poor superheroes, they're commenting about endorsements and the deodorant, and poor Flash is just like, "Oh god, next subject, please." So, you know, did anybody actually come up with where that kryptonite came from? Come on, where did kryptonite come from? I smell cover up. Oh, it's just Amanda. Sorry.
No, they because remember, wasn't part of the whole episode that
it got stolen, military grade,
right?
And then at the end, they're like, "Oh, where did this kryptonite come from, Lex?" You know, nothing came up of where he came up with this kryptonite. It's like, oh, it just keeps storehouses of it.
No, really. You're wrong, dude. Because the whole thing is, this is set up. I mean, we've been setting up for the Cadmus arc, but this is set up for next episode because they go to Star Labs and Emil Hamilton is there. And he shows them that the weapons-grade kryptonite was stolen, and then Superman automatically assumes that it's Lex. So Superman's main position is Lex fucking did it.
Okay, sorry, folks. I watched these all back-to-back, so they kind of...
It kind of runs together. It's okay.
I blame the microbiome.
And all this microbiology has to do with superheroes. Wait, I don't want to know. Don't answer.
Dude, the Atom.
Yeah, I know.
No, I watch these episodes in between my study sessions.
Oh, that's fun.
That's why. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking with it. okay, so why do they like him? Why do they like Captain Marvel when he's just another version of Superman, if you really think about it? And Batman puts it out, he's sunny. I like him because he's sunny. What?
Yeah.
Bruce, what happened?
Batman's going soft.
Oh, so the whole fight in Lexor City, there goes the property values.
Psh. Yep.
Okay, so the one thing that I will geek out comic-wise, the fight between Shazam... Sorry, he's Shazam. Captain Marvel, whatever. And Supes is... Kingdom Come. The big fight that happened in this is right out of Kingdom Come, which I think did come beforehand, where it's Superman versus Shazam in this whole Civil War type deal, you know, superpower Civil War going on. The two duke it out. And the one thing that Shazam really definitely has over Superman is that he's magically based. He has that advantage where magic is a weakness of Superman. So poor Cal, it's kind of at a disadvantage.
Right, yeah. He kind of is.
Anything else you got?
Clash really isn't one of my favorites. I honestly could do without this episode. I get that they had to have something kind of breaking up the whole Cadmus stuff, but I just...
It didn't really break
well, up. Right, well, really, it's setting it up because, like I said before, it's all set up for next episode when it really, really starts. But I don't know.
You know what? No, it was a nice 20-minute segment that was just prelude to that last 2 minutes. That big reveal of, okay, they're finally in cahoots. We knew this was going
to
happen.
Yeah, yeah. So we are going to move on.
President, foolish, faceless man, my campaign is a farce, a small part of a much grander scheme. President, do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president? That's right, conspiracy buff. I spent $75 million on a fake presidential campaign. All just to tick Superman off. Now, about those files you stole from me.
Seeing the visions at any time. You stole files from our computer. Just tell me what you've learned.
Topically applied fluoride doesn't prevent tooth decay. It does render teeth detectable by spy satellite.
Tell me what you know.
The plastic tips at the ends of shoelaces are called aglets. Their true purpose is sinister.
Up next is Question Authority. The rogue new god Mantis is a rampaging through Metropolis. He proves a handful for the combined powers of Superman, Captain Atom, but Superman manages to open a boom tube, sent him hurling back to Apocalypse. No sooner has the dust settled than Lois Lane arrives to remind Superman that they have a date. Oh, God, just tell her you're fucking Clark Kent already and get it over with, you moron.
Wait, you mean they have... She doesn't know? Come on! They're... I figured the way they're going on, at this point they were already married.
Loana and all. Let's see. As Superman flies away with her, Captain Atom is surprised to be hailed by General Eiling. In full dress uniform, Eiling informs him that his commission in the U.S. Air Force has been reinstated and it's time for Atom to make a choice. Over a picnic, Lois gently tells Superman that the Justice League's recent heavy-handed behavior is making some people nervous, and that people haven't forgotten the time when Superman was under Darkseid's control. And we jump to, with Huntress's help, the Question steals a series of high-security files from the government terminal, hoping that it would find proof of a link between Luther and Cadmus. Inside Cadmus, Luther is examined by Professor Hamilton and is shocked to be told that his kryptonite-induced cancer that has been with him throughout the last three or four or five seasons has disappeared entirely. Dun-dun-dun.
Okay, I really want to know the cure for that cancer, being Mr. Oncologist. Because if I could market that, bam, baby.
Yeah, I don't. You'll find out what the cure was, but you won't find out
a nice alternative.
It's nothing that you can really use in real life.
Damn it.
Thwarted
again.
Thwarted again. Yeah. As if it was never even there. Amanda Waller arrives and informs them of the theft. In his apartment, Question cracks the files and begins to review them, happens upon footage of the Justice Lord Superman assassinating President Luthor. I actually screen-capped. I'm going to have to look for it really quick. I actually screen-capped the image of the computer, and there's like at least three or four references to several different things. In the alternate dimension, after days of poring over the data, he becomes unhinged, believing that the same thing is fated to happen in their world. Luthor will become president, Flash will be killed, and Superman will kill will attack the government, except that according to Cadmus' simulations, resulting war between all metahumans of the Justice League and the humans will destroy the world. Question confronts Superman, who assures him that he would never do that what the Justice Lord Superman did, even if Luthor does become president. Question is unconvinced and decides that the only way to prevent Armageddon is to kill Luthor before he takes office. He goes to Luthor's office to do so, but Luthor swats him away with a display of inhuman strength that surprises both of them, and confesses that his entire presidential campaign is nothing but a bluff, a small part of a much grander scheme. Question is taken to Cadmus and tortured by Dr. Moon for details on the files he stole. Huntress kidnaps Jimmy Olsen. Aww, Jimmy! The first time we've seen Jimmy. Well, no, it isn't the first time we've seen Jimmy, but it's the first time we've seen Jimmy in a while. I mean, he was in that scene earlier in this episode with Lois, but, I mean, as far as, like, hearing him muffly speak, I guess you could say, because he did have his mouth duct taped.
Oh, well, it's only Jimmy.
You don't like Jimmy, do you?
No.
And uses his special watch to call Superman alone. Telling Superman about the tape, which she assumes is a fake, they track his communicator to a garbage dump. Huntress fears the worst, but Superman points out that they dumped his comm and not his body. They conclude that Question has been taken by Cadmus. Superman initially refuses to help her, insisting that the League cannot act without legal grounds. But when Huntress points out that Cadmus is interrogating Question under the government's authority, Superman decides that they'll act off the book. The pair smashes into Cadmus. Superman easily defeats their soldiers, and Huntress searches. Superman looks through a wall and sees Professor Hamilton. Realizing his role in the conspiracy, he confronts Hamilton, who doesn't deny what he's done, insisting that the world needs protection from Superman and his kind. Superman leaves in anger, and as he leaves, Hamilton appears tired with a concerned look on his face. Together, he and Huntress break into the cell where Question is being tortured. As they are leaving, they are stopped by Captain Atom, who says that he is now taking orders from the government, and his job is to stop them. Oh, boy. Supes and Captain Atom team up. Yay. I really did like that. That was much better than Superman versus Captain Marvel. Marvel? Whatever his name is.
Captain Marvel.
High octane action, because that's all most of this episode is.
Definitely.
Superman is late for a date with Lois. Huh. Like I said before, just tell her your fucking identity already, you moron. Yikes, Eiling is the dark side. Yay, Huntress and Question foreplay, especially when she puts the hard drive down her skirt and not in her belt. If you look at that scene, she doesn't open one of the tabs on her belt. She puts it right in her skirt. Oh, boy. Oh, hi, Aztec.
Yes, Aztec.
This is, I think, one of two times we see him. Not in this specifically episode, but in the series. This is one of two times that I know of that we see him. Justice Lord's plot revealed. Question attempts to kill Luthor. Luthor has super strength. What the hell is going on here? And when Question is being interrogated, the plastic tips at the ends of shoelaces are called aglets. Their true purpose is sinister. A-G-L-E-T. Don't you forget it. A lot of people may or may not get that reference.
I think you should put in an audio clip from the show. Just so people can get that.
Yeah, maybe I will. Even though Lupus doesn't really care, but my next note was Signal Watch, yay, Jimmy Olsen. Because I thought it was so cool that they referenced the Signal Watch. Not specifically Jimmy, but just that they referenced the watch itself. And even though Captain Adam is following orders, what a traitor. And
is he a traitor, or is he just doing what he thinks is right?
No, he's a traitor, because Eiling basically pressured him into it. I mean, it's total peer pressure on Eiling's part.
But if you're a military individual, even if you're off of active duty and they can recall you, you have to.
Yeah, but Eiling,
just conditioned
Eiling did it under false pretenses, though.
True.
So, that's all I got. What about you?
Let's see. Okay, to start off, Mantis. I wrote down Mantis. Seriously? That's an ugly-ass costume. And then 2 seconds later, another person from Apocalypse? That explains the outfit. Okay. the boom tube effect that we saw in the subway didn't seem quite up to par like we've seen before. The animation seemed a bit off. So it did bring up a really big question. Just who the hell cleans up after these superheroes? Like, really? Is there, like, a superpowered, like, cleanup crew? Is there, like, some third waivers that just go and clean up? I don't know what happens.
Maybe it's all the people that are in just generic Justice Watchtower uniforms that do it.
Maybe. let's see. Damn, I wish I had that body at 20. When they're talking about Luther. It's like, oh, you've got the body of a 20-year-old. I wish I had that body when I was 20. Really? How many 20-year-olds do you know that look like that? Really?
Well, now... Maybe,
I know, it's a fictional character.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say maybe they meant medically.
But still, he's got hell of muscle growth and muscle tone for a 20-year-old. I'll just say that. Anyway, Well, let's just hope that the encryption stands up. And the question is just like, oh, yeah, I cracked it. Woohoo. Done.
Yeah, woo, done.
And then when he cracks, that's when this starts getting really good.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing writing that makes me go, wow, how did they pass through with this? How did they produce this and not get in trouble? and then we find out who actually killed the Flash. We now saw through that montage of clips who pulled the trigger to kill the Flash.
Yeah.
And it was Luther.
Yeah.
Which explains why.
Why Superman went rogue.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they even said it in A Better World. You know, Flash died. Or, you know, Flash was killed by Luthor. I mean, it wasn't really said in a...
It wasn't expressly
said. Right, it wasn't expressly
said. Pulled the trigger.
It was hinted at that it was Luthor that killed him.
Yep. But it wasn't a case of, okay, he specifically killed it. It was just... It was alluded to, okay, you know, maybe one of his minions did it. Maybe he was the one that was Machiavellian maneuvering Copperhead to kill him. I don't know.
Yeah.
But... So, if he's doing it off the books, why is he in his normal uniform? Really? Not even like a uniform change?
What would you prefer, that it was black and silver and metallic looking?
Without the big S, it could have been cool. Cover his face up. He could have put glasses on and no one would be able to tell who he was.
Oh, that's so wrong.
And then the whole ending I just put down, that's a really bad move, Captain. Like, really, really bad.
See, the problem I have with this episode is what they did with these episodes. Because it's weird. Actually, I need to bring this up since we're talking about Question Authority and we'll be talking about Hunter's Moon here afterwards. I don't know if it's the DVD or the book or what the deal is, but... According to the booklet, let's see here. Oh, that's a nice little image there. In the booklet, it says on disc 12, episode 21 is Hunter's Moon, aka Mystery in Space, and then 22 is Question Authority, 23 is Flashpoint, and 24 is Panic in the Sky, 25 is Divided We Fall, and 26 is Epilogue. Now, on the DVD, they show them where Question Authority is first, which is how, you know, we're doing them, and then Hunter's Moon, and then Flashpoint. But
I don't know. It's so weird because you have this cliffhanger at the end of this episode, and then the very next episode you have a hot girl story. Seriously, so I'm wondering.
It's one hell of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm wondering why or where is it wrong? What is the foul up? Is it the DVD that's wrong, or is it the booklet, or what is it? What is it that's so wrong? Like, where are these actually supposed to be? And I'm actually going to look them up. So, if you have any other notes or thoughts, keep going.
That's all I have.
That's all you have.
Okay. Just the damn Eiling. But
hey, you know, J. Jonah Jameson though.
Yeah. No.
J.K. Simmons. So, all right, well, we are going to move on to the final episode. We'll be back after this audio clip.
I'm compensating for the interference. Say again.
This is a distress call from the mining ship Harkulent. We took samples from a vein of unidentified ore, and that's when everything started going wrong.
Slow down. Tell me what happened.
Radiation from the ore. Ship's main power is offline, we're stranded, and there's some kind of chain reaction taking place in the vein we took the sample from.
I need your data on the ore.
Transmitting, for all the good it'll do.
It appears to be a simple hematite, but iron oxide isn't radioactive.
Look at the atomic number, 676. It makes no sense.
Shaira. Is this what I think it is?
It's transuranic iron ore. Nth metal, like my mace, but unrefined. What about it?
We're stranded on a rock pretty much made of the stuff. Are we in any danger?
Sit tight. Don't move and don't touch anything. Prep a javelin for me. I'm on my way.
Wait. I'm assigning a support team.
Don't need one. I'll handle it myself.
That wasn't a suggestion. You haven't been pulling your weight as a team leader.
Excuse me?
You're not alone anymore. Stop behaving as if you are.
I'll go with you.
No, you won't. You're both founding members. I don't want there to be any question who's leading the mission.
Then I'll go.
Fine.
You've got to be kidding me.
Javelin 26 is ready for you on Pad 9. I'll have the last team member meet you there.
Come on, then.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Vixen hasn't spent much time in space. Good experience for her.
You know what I mean. Sending my girlfriend and my ex on the same mission?
Difficult as it may be for you to believe, I don't take your love life into consideration when I make command decisions.
Before we go into the final episode, I would just like to say that when I was making the list out for the episodes of this series, I have the complete series DVD collection. As you watch the DVDs, they show the episodes in the order of Question Authority and Hunter's Moon after it. The order is actually supposed to be switched. It's supposed to be Hunter's Moon, then Question Authority, according to the DCAU wiki, according to IMDb, everywhere else. So it's my own fault that we kind of screwed the pooch on this. So finally up today is Hunter's Moon, a.k.a. Mystery in Space. John Jones is on monitor duty in the watchtower when a distress signal arrives. A choppy transmission from miners requests assistance in dealing with a mysterious metal. After looking at the preliminary analysis, it is determined that the metal is nth metal, unrefined and very dangerous. Shaira volunteers to help out the miners, but is not allowed to go on her own. Vixen and Vigilante are ordered to go with her over the objections of John Stewart. He has an emotional connection to both Shaira and Vixen. Well, duh. After they arrive, the team quickly discovers it is a trap when Shaira cannot see the shadow cast from a floodlight on the mine, which is a hologram. As they try to escape, their javelin is destroyed. Thanagarians then emerge from the cave, led by Parandul, intent on exacting revenge against the traitor Shaira Hall. Shaira initially offers to go with the Thanagarians, but is forbidden by her teammates. In the course of the dialogue, her former Thanagarian comrades relay to her the demise of their empire and sacrifice of Herotalic. Shaira is devastated and quietly admits to Vixen that she has still had strong feelings for Talic. The Justice League members are able to evade the Thanagarians for a while with the help of Shaira's covert ops training, But in a melee, Vixen is captured while her teammates escape. Shira suggests a prisoner trade. Her for Vixen, while the elusive vigilante is able to commandeer the Thanagarian spaceship. He flies in to help Vixen while Shira engages in a semi-deranged robot-like Krager. Paranduel and Vixen fight on the Thanagarian craft. While Vigilante flies, Shira is able to defeat Krager by pulling out his power supply as they fall. He presumably perishes while Paranduel is thrown from the ship. With more confidence, Vixen is now flying. They pick up Shira and escape. Back at the Watchtower, Vigilante is carted off for treatment and for wounds received in battle, and Shira and Vixen immediately head off for some type of confrontation concerning their mutual affection for Jon Stewart. The viewer is led to think that it will not be pretty, but they end up laughing about the qualities of Stewart that they both love, and one or two that are both teasing him on. They reach an uneasy truce. Mari knows that Jon still has some feelings for Shira, and vice versa, but she likes to see things through. Shira raises her drink and says, "En garde."
Well, we know how that works out for us. So.
Well, it's all right. We're going to get to it kind of down the line. Well, we kind of already got into it with Once and Future thing, but even though that was a time travel story or a future story, it's an alternate time. It doesn't really count. But Bruce Timm has said in the past that eventually GA and Shira. Wow, that would be some weird pairing right there. GL and Shira. Bruce Timm has said probably eventually down the line they, you know, hook back up, but not right away. let's see. Sending my girlfriend and my ex on the same mission. Rutroll, let the claws come out.
And considering one of them has a, hawk claws.
Yeah. I know. Exactly. That's why I said it. Holy shit, the hawk people are back. Perrin and Krager. Oh, God.
I don't think so good anymore.
No. It's not good to confuse Krager. It's a hologram. We've been set up. Eek, it's a trap. Javelin go boom. That was a nice explosion. And I know I'm probably going to make Lupus cringe with my next note. Jeez, Hro, haven't you taken a shower since Starcrossed? You still got blood on you when GL whooped your ass?
Well, no.
At the end of Starcrossed, Hro was just red spotted bloody blotches everywhere, and in the images that they show of him doing the fighting with the Gordanians, he still has that kind of damage model, and it's like, wow, you couldn't clean yourself up?
He was just that pissed off.
Apparently so. I really like Vigilante. Darn sung dang busted horse thief and alien control panel which can't nobody work proper. And my last little note was, of course, the en garde thing, which I thought was kind of funny.
What else do I have? Bloody Krager.
Oh, yeah. You know, I really like the... I'm sorry to interrupt you because you're just sitting there laughing your ass off. I really like when she pulls out his little battery pack because that's just one of those epic Shire images where she's just, like, putting everything into it.
Oh, yeah. What else? Horse hockey.
Yeah.
Best line ever. Horse hockey. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I can see little horses with, like,
hockey sticks.
Trying to get the hockey sticks.
Oh, God. That's funny.
Paranduel, that Thanagarian bitch! I actually said that in the library at school, and everyone's like, what? Nothing! Let's see. Vigilante, awesome. So we've got Nathan Fillion and the actress from that's playing Vixen, It's a Firefly episode. Yes. What else? So Vixen, the speed of a cheetah, in heels no less. And I went, wait, she lives in Chelsea? What? I'm brain damaged, not stupid. And then, wait, you're trusting the brain damaged guy? Really? I this doesn't bode well. No wonder you guys aren't doing too well. Where do you go, Thanagarians? I think that's everything I got.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, holy crap. No way. What? I think, I can't be for sure, but I think Maria Canales met her husband on this episode because David Barrera is the voice of Hawk number 2.
Oh.
And her name now is Maria Canales Barrera. Let's see. Yeah, Vixen was done by Gina Torres, and Perrin Duel was done by Elizabeth Pena. And yeah, like you said, Nathan Fillion. Kind of cool. Let's see what other. In this episode, Shara wears a yellow tank top and pants as opposed to the white outfit she has worn after being reinstated. I don't know, I kind of like the little outfit she's got now. It's whether it's white or yellow, it doesn't matter to me, but it's much better than the old uniform that she had when she was a girl.
Not quite so plain.
Yeah, that's like I said, the character credited as Hawk number 2 is voiced by David Barrera, Maria Canales' real-life husband. So maybe they didn't meet on this episode. Maybe they were already married, but I never knew that before. I never knew that they'd worked together in this. Overall, I really like this episode. It's a nice – even though the air date order is reversed, it's supposed to be this, then Question Authority – it's a nice little breather, and it's still like, but I'm sure, you know, if they aired them out of order, they'd be like, oh shit, where the hell is my continuation from Question Authority?
I saw them in the order that we were going through. I'm like, wait.
Yeah, I know.
What? Is this a side story? Is this like what's going on the side?
I know. I fucked it up. I fully admit that. I fucked it up. It's the DVD's fault, though. Because I'm sorry, when I go to do shows like this, go to do set schedules for review shows like this, I automatically assume, and I know I shouldn't do this, but I automatically assume the DVD has them in order that they originally aired. So that's why that they were like that. All right. So I think that's it. Probably going to hear some quote or something or other, and we will come back with the outro.
Can you even see what you're shooting at?
Nope, just keeping them honest.
Giving away our position is more like it.
You got a better idea, I'm open.
How about we fight the bad guys instead of each other?
Shayera Hall!
Duel? Friend of yours?
Birds of a feather.
Did you really think you could get away with betraying the entire Thanagarian Empire?
Hold up. I thought we were the ones she betrayed.
Sounds like she betrayed everybody, cowboy.
You helped the Justice League destroy my hyperspace bypass. Only to stop you from killing everyone on Earth. That bypass was our last hope. Without it, we were helpless against our enemies. Because of you, the Thanagarian Empire lost the war. Nothing to say, traitor? Or hadn't you heard? Hro, what happened to Hro? After you and the Justice League destroyed the bypass, our fleet was ordered back to Thanagar. By the time we exited hyperspace, the Gordanians had already begun their final assault on our homeworld. In their minds, the war was over. But not for Hro Talak. He single-handedly destroyed a dozen of the enemy battleships, more. But finally the battle was lost. Of our entire fleet,
Only Kro Talik's ship remained. He ordered us into a scout ship. With his final breath, he destroyed the Gordanian flagship. Too little, too late. The war was already lost. I didn't know.
Well, that's going to be it for us on episode 18 of the Secret Origins podcast. We thank you for joining us here, and there are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on each episode post. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Damn it, I'm going to have to check that for next time. I still don't think we have any reviews, though. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is TFG and Mike. What is your Twitter?
Caminiti Style. CaminiTiStyle. Mickey Mouse.
Become a fan on Facebook. Facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins podcast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be reviewing the final four episodes from Justice League Unlimited Season 4. Those being Flashpoint, Panic in the Sky, Divided We Fall, and Epilogue. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
Lupus Convoy.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.